Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. Today we will be discussing the part two of an ongoing subject that we are discussing on online distance learning in education. Having had a discussion with Andy Lipson on the last 2 weeks ago, I think it was, Andy, right?
Yeah.
And it will be about your organization or your group that you're convening with on SFLA strike, right?
Correct.
Right. Now, before we head there, I just want to remind folks again, every single time I'm going to do this, we are online at what-s-left.webnote.com. And you can find this and any additional information on the episode notes. Please, if you like anything that we are doing here, please subscribe, rate, review, and share your favorite episode wherever you found this episode. And give us a comment below if you're interested.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into it, Andy. So tell us about today's topic, because it will be mostly centered around what you're doing.
Yeah. And... you know, when me and Eduardo, when you and I started What's Left, it was kind of like there was nothing going on. So it was like, what is a socialist to do to, you know, keep politics alive kind of thing? And you really helped me do that for the last year and a half, or almost 2 years now, actually. And now Kenny's joined us. And now there's stuff going on. So honestly, I want to take advantage of this forum to talk through the work that I'm doing with my comrades here in San Francisco. And really, honestly, field questions from two people I respect a lot, you, Eduardo, and you, Kenny, about this work, or comments about it, you know, questions and comments. I've asked them both to, you know, give me their questions about the kind of work I'm doing and we're doing. So what I'm going to tell you about is this project. It's, an initiative which says every student deserves an A, and it's really the next step in Strike Ready's SF, the group I'm working with here in San Francisco, as part of a school teacher in San Francisco Unified School District. And 2 weeks ago, our group put out a statement against distance learning, or warning about distance learning being brought in as sort of a shock doctrine, how it's inequitable, and how it's going to, you know, continue to dismantle public education and bring in private interests who want to make money during this time and want to make money on education. So we came to the conclusion in Strike Ready SF, after putting out that previous document about our concerns around distance learning and the need to grow for teachers to push opposition to that and to get control of this process that's taking place really over our heads from the school districts, from private interests, and from the state, really. Or at least that's how I see it. I think many of our other teachers see it, who are pushing back, see that as well. The next step in our struggle really was to this initiative around grades, which we're titling, which is a petition or a pledge that's titled "Every Student Deserves an A." I'll show it an image of the petition, underneath you can see an idea where to go to the petition online. But the petition basically makes this statement, is that really, given the massive inequality that exists in the current conditions of online learning itself is unequal, but these conditions we're facing of a health crisis, of an economic crisis, of the amount of fear that our students are facing, that teachers are facing, and the situation of essentially martial law-like conditions that we're living in with this quarantine, this is not a situation under which we can, where grades and grading and trying to get students back on a schedule of learning, it makes any sense. And so we want to take that off the table in solidarity with our students, in solidarity with our families that we work for, we feel, and work with. We want to take that, eliminate that by basically saying every student will be getting an A. How teachers do that is different. Some are going to like give everyone the same grade, but a passing grade. Different teachers are going to do it differently. But the overall idea, and I can tell you how I'm doing it, the overall idea is we don't want to punish our students with grades right now, and having to chase assignments down and trying to figure out which homework to do and which homework was assigned by this teacher particularly under the conditions that they're currently learning in. Because we don't have a single classroom right now. Like, if I have 130 students, which I do have close to 130 students, I have essentially 130 different classrooms in which the experience of learning is taking place. And it's not even clear what the conditions, like whether or not they, whether they have access to computers, whether their parents need it because they're doing distance stuff. So we just feel like we need to take that off the table and make it so that the learning that does happen is not really, is not being pushed by grading, but is the learning that students want to do. But that's only a piece of, I feel like, what's important. The other part of this is, I think the district and all the districts around the country know that there's really no major learning that's going to go on. I think what they're trying to do is, one, do a test run for how well they can get online education going, because it'll be a much cheaper way of educating. So I think freeing us up from grading essentially frees us up from the hamster wheel of online assignments that we have to put students on, and then allows us to get control of our teaching and of our curriculum. And lastly, I think the reason that the district wants us to hold students accountable is because they want to hold us accountable, and they want to make sure that we're not used to just doing our own thing, because that's really what needs to happen right now. Teachers around the country need to be liberating themselves from bell schedules and going out and trying to reach their students and find out, particularly the students who aren't coming to my class, who aren't showing up to those Zoom classes. That is the majority of my work right now. Of course, I do have some work to help students who want to be educated right now, but the majority of my work is finding those students who are not connected and not hooked up right now. And really, this bell schedule they're putting us on, and I can show you the schedule we have for admission high school, but a lot of schools are going to have similar schedules like this, of students going to the first period, then their second period, then their third period, then the next day, you know, go to fourth period, fifth period, sixth period, seventh period. Basically, you know, Monday through Friday for some schools. For us, it's Tuesday through Friday, but it's basically school from 9 in the morning till about noon, sometimes up as late as 1 or 2. It makes no sense. That schedule doesn't make any sense right now. So the beginning of getting this, getting our control back, I do feel is a claim of solidarity with our students of, we're not grading you, and if we do grade you, we're going to just give you an A, because the learning you're going to do is about the learning you want to do or need to do right now, or that works for you, not about me giving you an assignment that you have to do because you're afraid of what it's going to mean for your future. So I hope that makes sense.
If I may, so there are three points to what you just said. One is that there is a crisis, and the students' learning environment is not there for the majority of the students, especially in public education, is what you're pointing out to.
I can say I don't know what the environment is. It's a chaotic. Some can be fine environments, but others not. So I can't. There's such inequality of those environments that I know that there's no way I can level things out in a single classroom. I don't have a single classroom.
So given the pandemic, and then you're saying that the learning conditions may or may not be suitable, and the variables are not something you all can rely on as educators, correct?
Yeah.
Because it may be chaotic, it may be stressful, it may be whatever, right? Right, that's first. And then the second thing is you're saying, essentially what you're saying is that this actually might be a capitalistic move by the people who are trying to use a students right now as guinea pigs to see what this education would look like using online distance learning, that this is the generation that they will use for future generations.
Right. That's the second point. So in a sense, they don't really know how to implement online learning in public education. They want to use this crisis to get us to practice some things to see what works and what doesn't work. What they know, there's going to be massive inequality, but what can we do to maybe not make that inequality so unequal? I don't think we should. A college teacher said it really well. The colleges are right now being online, and that college teacher, I can't remember her name, but I posted it on Facebook, said we need to do a bad job with online learning right now. And that's what teachers need to do, is do a bad job of the Pearson-like online learning. We need to do the job of reaching out to our students and finding out what they need and how to really genuinely meet them. And that ain't going to be about some program.
The third point that I was able to hear from what Joe had said was that there is a top level, maybe micromanaging of workers that is trying to do this during this crisis. where they don't want you or just to do it up to you or like bottom up, right?
Right.
They don't want you as workers to take it into your own hands.
Correct.
Rather, they want to make sure that there is some system in place for to control all of you as educators, yes?
Correct. That's what I would say, right? I would say that this moment right now, which for me is almost a bigger economic crisis and a fear crisis in terms of people being separated, as much as it is a crisis of health. But all those things are mixed in. The needs right now are one to one, or rather, are from the base. That's actually
Yeah.
true always in society, but crises are what expose that the most.
All right. So what I hear is that basically you're saying that the role of teachers is more at their own discretion to basically assess every student's need, and not grading, right? Because how do you see grading in a regular environment that's not under crisis?
I mean, grades have always been a problem under capitalism. I don't think if we had real socialist education, we would have grades, or not grades, letter grades. Letter grades really ultimately are quick denoters for people above students, whether they be a college or really ultimately it's the employer, to denote who's valuable and who's not. Who can I work with and who can't I work with? And we are tasked in public education with doing that sorting out of good workers versus bad workers for ultimately for the capitalists. That is the role of grades. And it is also the lever of fear because those grades can be used as your future that are part of the indoctrination process that we use within public education. That's why a lot of teachers don't like grades. It is just the system we have.
Before we get into this petition that you have outlined, which we will get to, that was created by Strike Ready SF, what would be an alternative to grades in a socialist society? Because you and I have actually had conversations in cafes before, Andy, and you have mentioned this even when I was raising Saul, when he was an adolescent, we had this conversation. What is an alternative? Because there what in education there has to be some form of measuring, right? And we're not going to in everything on how education can be transformed in a socialist society. We're not going to every single detail, but just if you can just give us a view of what would look what would look like in a socialist society. And I
Well,
think maybe also it might be helpful to answer the question of what is the goal of education?
it depends if we're talking about capitalism or socialism.
And socialism, and
Okay.
versus or what should be the goal,
Okay.
because
Well, let me go to this question and then I'll go to that question because I don't think I can answer those two together at the same time. So hold on to that question. I'll just start with the grades question. You said grades should be a measurement. They should only be a measurement under capitalism. They need to be a measurement of your quality. They aren't a measurement, they're an assessment. Grades, or rather the role of an educator and the role and everyone in a class, if we have classrooms under socialism, I do believe we'll have classrooms, although we won't I wouldn't see a reason why they all have to be the same grade or the same age, you know. But I think we will have a classroom. Then honestly, assessments are not just coming from the teacher, the instructor. Assessments are coming from the entire community about what are your strengths? What do you do well? How do you fit, like for the projects that we're doing, what are the things that you bring to that are your strengths and what could you learn out of that? But then what are areas you might want to grow in? And those are goals that are best set by the individuals in that classroom. What do they want to learn about? What do they want to do? What are they good at? What are they poor at? What do they poor at that they want to get better? What are they poor at that they don't really care about that they're poor at? Those should be up to the individual, and the assessments can be for that individual, but they are broadly assessments that they should get from their peers, from the other classmates, and from the teacher. That can be written down, it can be said, but it doesn't sound like A, B, C, or D. It's like information. It's like, you do your calculations very well. It's really amazing how thorough you are in that and how I'm able to read that. At the same time, I'm noticing that you struggle to communicate with your other friends about what you're doing, like how, and teach them. do you think that's something you'd want to learn more? You know, things like that. That's what an assessment would be. It would be ongoing. There wouldn't be this kind of a, you get a grade at a semester. It's an ongoing experience together, and you grow. You don't have to, you grow through a self-assessment, through community assessment, and yes, have a mentor there who can be like, okay, I know something more about this, so I can help you know whether you're moving along that road if you have a goal of getting better at something. So I don't see where a grade fits into any of that.
In a socialist society.
In a socialist society.
And to Kenny's question.
And Kenny, your question again was?
So what is the role of education in a socialist society?
I think it would be the same as it is under a capitalist society, to train the working class to be fit for what it's supposed to do. But in the case of capitalism, we are training the working class to be fit for management, to be fit to be controlled, to be fit to be told what to do, to be fit to figure out how to rise to a particular level of expertise and maybe use that in some way that helps capitalists, right? That's what working class is being made fit for, a bell schedule, get up in the morning, go here, do this, do that, that kind of indoctrination. I think a socialist education would make workers fit for collective rule so that they are used to making decisions, of assessing things, of working together, of debating together, of knowing how to take votes, knowing how to decide things collectively, knowing when a decision has been made that a group can really act on versus a decision that can't be acted on. Those are things that communities have to figure out. 51% doesn't always get it done. Sometimes you need 70 to 80% to move on something. Sometimes 51% is enough. That's a community decision. So workers need to be trained to work that way and to work in that collective way. So it would be training workers to rule, not just a few workers that are trained to rule who go to private schools, who go to Stanford, and then go up into these upper echelons. The entire working class is being trained to rule as a collective group.
And who decides that should be the case in a socialist society?
I think workers would recognize, we would see that we need our children to be educated to perform a new role in that society. If we would have become fit to rule through the act of revolution, through fighting the capitalists and the organization that would have made that possible. But what about that next generation that didn't have to go through that fight? How are they going to become fit to rule? How are they going to become fit to rule democratically? Well, that means we have to completely transform our education system from this thing of not just A, B, C's, and D's, but of rote memorization. Children are going to have to take much more control over their own education and learn to grow into that control, but not just as individuals, but as groups. And they're going to have to learn how to work as groups together to get things done and understand that the assessment that comes from them is not just an individual assessment, but a collective assessment of, did we get done what we wanted to get done? And why not? Where did we fall short? What did we need to do? I think it's a completely different model for education, but it's the same thing, training workers.
You think that, you know, students would maybe come to that same conclusion that, you know, to continue with that society, that it's, or is there some sort of level of, you know, for lack of a better word, maybe indoctrination or, you know, some sort of, hey, this is what needs to happen because of this. This might be a more philosophical question.
The society that rules always decides what the ideas of that society are. That's true under capitalism. That will be true if there's a socialist state where there are still class divisions, right? Prior to what we call communism, when it's a classless society. This is how I would see the progression going. I'm just repeating stuff from Lenin's State and Revolution. But let's just say we're talking about the early stages of the revolution's happened and we're starting our first schools. There's an indoctrination of why racism doesn't work, why sexism doesn't work, why nationalism doesn't work, why sharing is more important than competing, but why competing, it doesn't have to be bad, but it should be in elements of that bring you together, doesn't separate you, you know? Because community is going to be emphasized over like just what benefits one individual. And communal values are going to just are going to be emphasized, and that will be a different kind of indoctrination that is a result of the lessons we had to learn out of the struggle to defeat the capitalists, because whatever lessons we had to learn to defeat capitalists of how to build that unity are going to be the lessons we're going to need to transmit to that next generation. And then they're going to figure out what to do with that without having gone through the struggle to make a new society.
So what I hear from, you know, the process of, again, of fighting capitalism and revolution is that there is a process for those pioneers, if I can call them that, you know, that are starting that new society. You know, there's a process for them to learn. So they would shape that first, I guess, generation, the first next generation.
That is the role of education, you know. Mm-hmm. And what education would look like in a classless society, that's even harder for me to imagine. But I do think education is always about the values of, it is a way of bringing the values that a society has come to that are decided by that ruling class of that period, of how to bring them into those values. That's going to be the way that education is, as long as there are classes. And that's true even if once we have the revolution, it's a different kind of values, but there will be a training and an emphasis on those sorts of things versus meritocracy. And like, if you work hard enough, you can get it above versus some, you know, it's like, it's going to be about like, what can we do together? As more, I imagine, more than what can just you do for yourself.
Right. So let's get into this petition that you and your group, Strike Ready SF, that had created, hopefully being able to reach as many educators, not just in district that I imagine, but in other districts as well. And hopefully maybe they'll form their own, they'll create something from
it. Right. We definitely hope that this spreads, you know.
Right. So we will have it for our listeners. We will read it just like we did last time with your previous document, right?
I mean, I would
how
say...
How would you want to go about it? I think there's a lot here that you should read.
So the title of this is Every Student Deserves an A. And it's, again, it's kind of written in the form of a union resolution, which has whereas, and therefore be it resolved. And the first part says, whereas an educator's highest priority during a global pandemic must be their health and well-being of themselves, their families, their students, and their students' families. And whereas our current working conditions and students' learning conditions are chaotic, stressful, and varied, and whereas an educator's job during a crisis is to meet the diverse and shifting needs of students and teachers, which starts with eliminating the undue pressures of grades and grading, and whereas students and educators are not prepared with access to technology or skills to navigate digital platforms prior to the pandemic, and whereas online learning without a concrete plan to support students who speak English as a second language, students who have IEPs, those are individualized education plans, students with learning disabilities, and students who have limited experience with digital technology is inherently inequitable, and whereas the rush to online learning only benefits corporate interests that seek to privatize public education while profiting from this crisis, e.g. Pearson, and whereas online learning dramatically heightens existing inequalities at a time when we need to be coming together, and whereas educators best show solidarity with students, families, and fellow educators by trusting in our collective judgment to determine community needs. Therefore, be it resolved that we, the undersigned educators, deem it both unfair and punitive to assess students and educators on their capacity to adapt to online learning and believe doing so harms our goals of equity and universal access in public education. And finally, be it resolved that we, the undersigned educators, pledge to grade all students with fours exceeding standards, and that's a grading standard for elementary schools, or A's for the remainder of the 2019-20 school year, as long as schools remain closed.
Why is this important to you? Why? I mean, just what or how is this as a socialist and as an educator, and what are you doing with your classroom?
The first thing that's important for me is it's an act of solidarity with my students, because I don't think it's fair to grade them right now. And honestly, I don't know what it's going to be like for me to teach them right now. and I want to liberate them and myself from any concerns about grading and what I'm doing as a teacher and this whole system we're trying to set up. It's like things are so much in motion. I just want to take grades out of the question. It frees me up to relax a little bit and not feel like I'm hurting myself or hurting them through this education process if they choose to, if that's what they need. Number two, by taking grades off the table, right now there are some students who don't need to be going, like, who, that's not what's going on right now, is, oh, going to a class. I talked to one parent who basically said that she, I had to understand that her and her daughter are going to be going to do work at, like, food kitchen or something like that on a Thursday when classes are supposed to be taking place. They're doing that, obviously, because there's a crisis right now and they want to play a role there. Putting grades in there basically means that student's got to figure out how to catch up. And, you know, that I want that student to come to my classroom maybe on a Tuesday, but not be worried that they're going to miss it on a Thursday. And last, and probably this is the most important part, is I want teachers to get control of this education process again, because this thing is spinning out of control for us. The district is telling us what to do. They're completely bringing in a mechanism of education that we all know is inherently way more inequitable than what we currently have, and we're driving towards it, and we got to put the brakes on it. So part of this is just reclaiming the idea of we get to decide what education as educators, not the district, not online people, not our administration even. It's us as educators in conjunction with our students and families. We're the ones who decide what education is. And this is about trying to reclaim that a little bit.
So immediately, some teacher friends looking at this are going to push back.
Yeah.
And this is what some of them will say. They will say that this process has been tried at other schools. There is a school out in Oakland where you live, Andy, where I will not name the high school, but where all students get A's. And this is in class. This is like they have a physical classroom to be, and they have teachers, they have support, they have social workers, they have therapists. And it's a small school. So the students are trying not, this is, they're not trying to lose them. And they're all given grades.
A grades.
And all, excuse me, yes, they're all given A's. The people there are very much aligned with a lot of the social justice movement of trying to make sure that the students are not being as well pigeonholed or marginalized or left behind by the system or giving everyone an opportunity. I have discussed this with a teacher, and a teacher has said it has not worked. It has not worked because the students haven't had, they're in a bubble. They're not right. They are feeling, they feel it as if the students are not prepared for the world. And giving an A to every single student will not give them a chance to be able to confront what it would look like in university, what it would look like for their future teachers. And if they're in ninth grade right now, what it will look like for them in, for the next 3 years. And if they are in middle school, what it will look like for the rest of their school years in public education. What do you have to say to that?
Well, first off, they're wrong to say that what's being tried there is the same as what we're doing here, because those schools didn't exist under martial law. They didn't they weren't formed under perhaps one of the greatest economic crises since the Great Depression, on top of a pandemic happening while that's simultaneously happening. And those are the conditions that are causing us teachers to say right now, if you're gonna try to get us to teach right now, then we're taking grades off the table. This is an immediate response to the crisis that's taking place, to liberating ourselves so we can act in real humanity with our fellow students and their families. We don't see this as solving the problems of public education. Now, that school, which thought they might be solving the problems of public education by eliminating grading, they're wrong. They won't be able to solve it because it's a problem of capitalism. you will have to have a revolution in order to make things work. Now, if those kids are rich and things like that, then their shit's settled anyway. They're fine. Because whether you give them grades or whether you don't give them grades, those are going to be the future rulers of the world. Because they come
I should mention demographically, those students are 90% low income and come from an impoverished...
And it ain't going to work there either. So if that's school, that ain't going to work because for sure there's... It's not the grading system is just like one aspect of the public education system. It just shows how broken it is. The actual entire structure has to be dismantled and rebuilt with a completely different project.
You're talking even college then?
Yes. Yeah. The whole thing, right? From graduate school, education has to probably be seen ultimately as just part of a lifelong learning experience that you have with other people. All right. So, you know, I think the whole thing has to be changed. So we're not attempting to create a utopia within this crisis. We're attempting to do closer to what a doctor would say is like, do no harm or don't do more harm. And we are saying simply that putting grades on the table right now just adds to the stress that these students are already experiencing. Because frankly, teachers don't know what our classrooms are going to look like in these coming weeks. We don't exactly know what our lessons are going to look like. To throw grades into the mix is like literally taking kids while they're experiencing all sorts of fear about parents having problems, people not being out of work, to just take another thing and hit them with it on the side of their head with this notion of grades. Get to class, you know? And that's just wrong right now. We shouldn't do that. I mean, it's wrong all the time in an aspect, but you got to understand, the problem of public education doesn't condense down to grades. It condenses down to the capitalist system. And the role of us teachers is just to train workers to be exploited and to figure out which ones can get to the level where they can become future exploiters.
Can the role of educators be to follow up with their students if they're older or with parents, and even if they have adolescent, if parents have adolescents? I feel as if let's take it here on the personal level. My brother has a 5-year-old, mm-hmm. and I have volunteered at his school a lot. And here I am as a former educator, and every single day there are at least 2 hours of tutoring, not all at one time,
yeah.
But I there are intervals of it. And so my nephew is progressing in his writing and his,
yep,
reading ability. His teacher has not followed up with us,
right,
with my brother and with us. And we're going to send them an email because other schools on the other side of town are following up with their students and their families. And what I'm trying to say is, what I'm thinking really are of the other classmates, his other classmates, where they don't have this level of support. There isn't, you know, a former educator uncle inside your every single one of these children's home. And my nephew, I should mention, goes to a very, very low-performing school in Sunnydale, one of the most marginalized community neighborhoods in San Francisco. And all of these other students don't have that level. It's a working class neighborhood, and they don't have that level of support. I'm only imagining how much screen time they are having and how behind they will be in the future. Would you say that maybe the role of an educator is to follow up with these parents?
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, and in reality, what's going to, if I followed the okie doke of what the district wants me to do, then the 20 to 25% of the student, most of my work would be focused around the 20 to 25% of my classes that show up and meet me at the screen in a Zoom room where we do work and we do assignments. I hand out assignments. I grade those assignments. I'm going to get stuck on that wheel, all right? Which means the 75% that aren't showing up to my class, I'm not going to have time to do that. They're setting a schedule for us that just gives us no time to deal except with the students that are here. That's why this is going to be, it's going to take an existing inequality and make it even greater. So I'm going to still teach those kids who are showing up to my Zoom room, but I need to give myself the flexibility to spend most of my work time trying to find one by one those other students who are not showing up and figuring out what role I can do to keep them engaged and like, what do they need right now?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you say to someone that maybe argues that, you know, basically kind of jumping off what Eduardo was saying, that, you know, these kids, right, like you want to change the system. You're arguing for, you know, this thing to grow, right, and eventually basically revolutionize the way education happens. So in the meantime, you know, while that happens, these kids are still going to have to go back to the world of capitalism. And aren't you holding them back?
Well, we are, I do believe we are not only holding them back, but grinding them further under the wheel if we just do as we're told, which is do the online classes, let's go forward, let's get back to order again. Then I think we are, the majority of kids are getting, not only the kids who are not showing up to the classroom, the kids who are showing up to the classroom are going to be ground by the beast that is being fed here. And that beast is not San Francisco Unified. That beast is not even Gavin Newsom or Donald Trump. That beast is capitalism, right? Which is trying to privatize public education, further the profit aims that they have, and further make a society that's already unequal, that we already talked about last episode, is going to become increasingly unequal, kind of conditioned to that. So all of them are going to face that world. The only ones who'll get out are the ones who capitalism identifies as the ones who are going to be the future bastards that are willing to like screw everyone else over and become part of that capitalist class. All right. Those are the only ones we can say currently. And we already know that's going to be a minority. So the best thing I can do for my students right now is to resist that and to be clear that I'm resisting. That's why I'm telling my students, I don't agree with this thing. Like, the parents I've talked to, I don't agree with this schedule, the scheduling that they're doing. I think they're not giving us the freedom to do that. Now, my school may say, oh, go ahead and give whatever grade you want. That's not good enough. I don't want to just be able to give any grade. I want us as teachers to get control back of this education process right now, or this what's going on right now. And that, to me, is the lesson we could teach our students and families, is that we're not just going to do as we're told right now. We're going to do what we think is right and what the moment needs. Now, the moment really does need a revolution. I do not see while we're all being kept at 6 feet of separation, everyone seems to be obeying that. I don't see us organizing that right now, but I see a lot of fear. So this is a very modest moment of organizing, of bringing people together and trying to assert our needs in the face of a monolith that's basically smashing us. So I recognize that I feel like this is very small, but it's an act of solidarity with other students and their families, and it's an act of resistance to what I feel is an imposition of the capitalist system on this entire process.
Do you see this as a reactive or proactive approach?
Reactive. It is not proactive. This is not something where it's, oh, I mean, one might say that getting rid of grades might be part of a revolutionary struggle, but that what we want education to look like is going to come after a revolution, not, I don't think, and maybe some of the schools of education we have as we build towards the revolution, maybe, I don't know. But no, this is reactive. This is reacting to what the state is doing and what capitalists are doing. And so it's a retreating. I see us as not an army that's just retreating. We are an army that's been routed and is running backwards. And we're trying to grab a few people while they're running backwards and get them to stand and stand still and not fall back more. So this is definitely a defensive maneuver, not one of offense.
Yeah, so again, I think this may tie into the question of reform versus revolution in a different approach. Or you're saying, what I hear is you're saying is you have to let go, right, of some things and to construct something better. But aren't incremental changes part of this change?
I feel maybe if we're on the same sort of question, Kenny, not the same idea. I'm not saying you advocate for this idea. I'm just saying your question. It seems like this cold turkey approach could potentially be a risk for our most vulnerable population, such as Mission High School, and for many of the students that are there. If they do not have any sort of system in place for them, and they do have to, the revolution is not going to happen next year or two years from now.
Not that, right? I can tell, yeah.
They have to go into the workforce. If these students don't have a system in place for them now, how will they be able to get into university or college where these systems are currently in place and where they do have to live and navigate through a system where there are grades, where there is a system where they have to be measured? And our Black and brown youth are the lowest in population going to, not advocating here for university. As a matter of fact, both of you know that I have myself had a very, my relationship with university. I'm just saying that it's already challenging for Black and brown students in public education being accepted to certain universities that they work hard for, or even if they don't go to university, going into the workforce, vocational studies, being in a system where there's an element of socialism in a capitalist society. Well, this may or may not be part of Kenny's question. Is that what you're asking, Kenny?
I think it's along the same lines. So because basically I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Right. You know, because, I am as well.
So again, that, you know, like, what would you say to that argument that you are actually doing more damage, you know, in letting these kids fall to the cracks, you know, because it's too radical of an approach. Basically that, you know, that I think that would be the argument.
I mean, I would, I wonder if it's radical enough. I think there's some people who would say, well, let's not even submit their grades, but we'll get to that. So first off, let me ask y'all a question. Let's say, okay, let's just say I have 100 students. I have 120. If I told you that only 30 of those students are showing up to my online classes, what grade would you give the 70 who aren't showing up? That's question one. And number two, what do you think is going to happen if I'm not given the time to go find those students and find out where they're going and what's going on with them so that I can get them to school next August? Do you think those kids are more likely to come to school in August when they spent 2 months essentially out of the school program? Like, again, I don't think capitalism works. The only way we're going to really solve this for our kids is get rid of capitalism. But short of that, families expect that there's an education system that's going to help them move up through the system. So my question comes back to you is, okay, I know what to do with the 30 kids who show up. What do you want to do with the 70 who don't?
And again, playing this devil's advocate here,
right?
What then happens to, you know, maybe out of those 30 kids, you lose 5 or 10 because, you know, you're looking for those other ones.
Yeah, and I'm going to make that clear. I'm going to make that clear to the 30 who are there that I'm not a teacher interested. I'm going to teach them, but I'm going to spend most of my time looking for the other ones, and I'm going to let them know that. Like, they know their classmates are missing. I mean, students, when they see a teacher throw a kid out, and then they see that that teacher doesn't teach the kid when they come back in, students don't like that. The biggest compliment I've gotten from some of my students is, because I can be disciplinarian at times, stuff like that, is that they say, we liked how you always tried to teach everyone, that you never gave up on anyone. That's the biggest thing that they say when they compliment me. Now, I think there's students who would say, no, he gave up on me. And I think there have been students I've given up on. I do believe that. But what students want to see? They want to see us not give up on anyone. Now, why do they want that? Is it because they're nice? They're better people than they're? No, because people have an inherent sense of wanting to do things together. And whether we like it or not, all those 30 kids showing up in those tiny little electronic classrooms, they know the names that are missing. You see what Zoom does. It puts everyone's name up there. And you put it on a grid screen, you get to see who's there and who's not. And a teacher who just acts like nothing's happening there, that's terrifying to a student. They know the teacher is saying, I don't give a fuck what happened to the other students. And they know it. So I'm telling them exactly the wrong message. If I don't say, stop here, folks, we're going to only do a little bit of stuff because I'm collecting those other folks, then then I'm literally telling these kids, I'll feed you to the any mill I want to. Because if only two of you are making it through, the rest of you, I'll feed to whatever dog wants to eat you. Because that's the way this system works. And I'm willing to do it just to save my skin. That's what I'm telling them. So it's the opposite. Students want me to do it. Not because, oh, we get to slow things down. It also happens to be, this is not the moment mostly, but I actually think learning can go on here. But I'm going to have a Zoom class with students on Friday, this Friday, where we're literally saying, what's our schedule? What do we want to learn? Do you want homework? Do you not want homework? Find out who wants to come to class or who wants to get individualized learning. That's what I'm going to find out. But that's from the kids who show up. I got a job to do to find out the kids who didn't show up. So that's what learning is going to be like right now in my classroom. And the biggest lesson is we don't want to leave anyone behind. Does somebody know where D'Angelo is? Does somebody have their number? Can somebody find him? I can't find him. Can you? That's what this moment's about right now. It ain't about like, you know, force equals mass times acceleration. If you do that calculation, do you know the units?
I feel as if we might just be losing them in the long run if the students are not given, I don't know, some parameters, some follow-up, some measurement, because we do live in a society where people do measure it through grades, unfortunately. And some students that are going to be, if especially some would argue that during this crisis, we should hold them even responsible for making sure that they are valuing and putting their education in priority, given that their generation is experiencing the most, what do you call it? The most impact of this COVID-19 of the crisis. So that's how I'm seeing this, where some of the students might be lost. Given that they still have to go to apply for college, and we're talking high schoolers right now, just momentarily.
Well, I can guarantee you that even the top end students, and I'm talking more about 10th graders and 11th graders, as well as some seniors, they are extremely nervous about what's coming to them from this distance learning experience and what it will mean for their grades when they try to get from 11th grade to 12th grade now, as they're very concerned about that. I'm talking about even the top students in our school, okay, are nervous about that. Now, I think they're going to be fine. I think they'd be fine whether a teacher does the all A's or not. But because now, not just am I losing, you know, one or two students or four or five students, I'm losing 70. And they're dropping off the thing because they just got F's. That's what they're getting. If I did a regular grading system, they're all getting F's, you know? And maybe that means, if you average it out, they get a C or a D for that semester at the end. That's on their record, and that's the thing that they have to take with them. And they have to take it under a system that's incredibly unfair, when maybe they were taking care of a grandmother, or maybe they had to get an extra job because someone else got fired or laid off. And this is all happening under the context of a massive economic crisis, a pandemic, martial law. We're under martial law right now, essentially. Quarantine. We're separated like from each other. So that's an absurd situation from which to say to kids, I'm going to grade you on this A through F thing right now. And I think we lose way more. And those kids, and the fact is all I'm trying to do is find those students who are going to be in my class right now. I've already told them, they don't come to class, they get A's. They come to class, they get A's. So what is the reason they're coming to my class? The reason they're coming to my class to be online is so they can learn. And those are the students who are ready for that moment. But I don't know the situation for the other ones. I'm not going to even judge them for not coming to my classroom because I don't know their situation right now. I mean, everyone's gotten hit by a 2x4 right now. And so I am not going to say that, oh, the kid who didn't show up to my class, they don't value education. They might be getting an education about something else right now, trying to help their dad figure out how to do an unemployment, whatever. I don't know. Or taking care of somebody who's sick. So that is the situation. It is so varied, so chaotic, that grades right now, for me to administer grades right now, I feel like is meaningless, and I do think it's punitive, and almost cruel. So that's what I would say about that.
You have more of a comment than a question, but sounds to me that you know, there's also in the background this element of the pressure of time, that a kid needs to graduate in this sequence at this time, or they're out, they're done, you know, and so their education is tied to that, you know, and so their usefulness, you know, is based on that system. And obviously people learn at different rates, you know, and for different reasons. And again, this is more of a comment about, you know, our system of capitalism that we have to acknowledge in order to change. Eduardo?
So it seems like you and your group then Strike Ready SF.
Yeah.
You have this petition that is going to be shared by Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. What are you hoping then? Is it just that teachers just don't, that the teachers give every student an A? Is that it?
No,
I mean, go ahead.
No, that's a good question. I mean, if just teachers just changed their grading system and we just went along with everything that's going on, then this thing wouldn't really work.
Right.
What I'm hoping is it makes teachers pause and say, what is this moment? What is needed of me right now? Instead of what am I being told what to do? And most teachers right now are responding based on what they're being told to do by administration or by a district. And not only is that hurting our students, hurting their families by doing that, it is literally antithetical to the process by which we're going to need to come together to make a revolution possible. So the change I'm looking for is the change in the working class and the change in their minds in relationship to their job right now, and not seeing it as just like, I get a paycheck, so since I get a paycheck, you can tell me what to do, is like say, no, I'm paid to be an educator. I'm actually underpaid to be an educator. And I'm best fit to figure out what my job should be, not the district. And it's not just I, but we. We as other educators, paraprofessionals, custodians, cafeteria workers, security, families, students, we can decide what should happen at this moment. And in fact, we can decide what can happen at every moment. And when we get there, we are getting closer to something that is a revolution. But what I hope is that this plants a seed of doubt, or not a doubt, seed of actually confidence for teachers to say to themselves, maybe I should be asserting my values instead of just following what somebody's telling me to do.
But doesn't that require, for this to grow, willingness to continue to battle, basically?
Yeah.
Fight back. And, you know, because in previous episodes, you've mentioned, you know, how it's difficult. I guess maybe we're in private conversations of how it's difficult to, and sometimes you don't understand why people, you know, keep basically waiting for the district to do something.
Yeah.
Isn't that maybe just the way things are? Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, if they are the way things are, then what I should be doing is, there's a TV behind me, I play video games on this, then I should just stop doing any of this stuff and just play video games. I got the last version of Tomb Raider I got to play. Me and Brandy are playing Uncharted, The Lost Legacy, The Lost Episode. You know that one, right? So we got to play that. So if that's the case, if it's truly that is the way things are and that is the way they will be, then, you know, I'm just going to play some video games and let the world burn. I mean, I'll come down to that. But it is very bad right now. People's heads have been fixed very heavily by this crisis, actually. I feel like they've been told what to do on so many different levels and are obeying it. And fear has been used to do that, that it's a tall tale just to get people to say, maybe I should not do this thing I'm being told to do. And maybe this actually fits with my values, the idea of, you know, giving all kids the same grade, because I actually have the value of equity. Like I said, I think I said this last episode, there are teachers who I know who taught me about equity in school who know this is going to be inequitable, but are going along with it because they just feel like we need to do something. And it's what the district is telling them to do. And they just want somebody to tell them what to do so they can do it. And so the odds are very much stacked against us. But we're in my mind, we're trying to do something. We're trying to find where is that stop point that we can accumulate some people so we can push forward? And I think that's how I see this initiative. This isn't just about grades. It's about teachers standing up for their own values in solidarity with their students and families.
There is I can see some teachers saying that this is that they would be more interested in seeking out assurances from the district, from government, that teachers would not be replaced, that teachers would not be just replaced by online learning, rather that this would actually be an experiment with future crises, that why not do a hybrid of teachers fighting for assurances that they will keep their jobs and that they will also be trained in online distance learning, because this is not the first pandemic that we might just experience given how the world and the globe is just going. There might be war, there might be natural disasters, there might be another pandemic, like a virus that will provoke another pandemic, or there might be who knows what, given our circumstances that are happening in the world. So why not instead take this opportunity to learn how to do online distance learning and to be able to learn how to expand the classroom outside of the physical classroom for momentary, temporary times if there's, say, an earthquake, a hurricane, or a time of war when we need to shelter in place?
I mean, I don't know if this is going to be the answer that you're, well, I would say that for me, I'm not doing this to find some stopgap measure to solve the crisis, the most recent crisis of capitalism, that it's, you know, whether it's the pandemic or whether capitalism doesn't know what to do in the case of an earthquake, or an earthquake that happens and that just, that there is no solution under capitalism to these problems. No fair solution. No, I mean, these crises can still happen, but there's nothing. The next earthquake that hits San Francisco will be used to gentrify San Francisco. Will be used for rich people to buy up property and push black people out of the Bayview. That's what the result of the next disaster will be here in San Francisco. So, there, my job as a worker is not to try to figure out how do we survive that. We can't survive that. We have to make a revolution to end that. The only element in this thing that's important, for me at least, is the element of workers taking back control for themselves of their job and doing that in solidarity with each other and students. There's no other future except for that kind of solidarity. And unfortunately, so that's the only element. If the district told everyone, you must give all A's, then this piece of paper becomes meaningless. Because then we as teachers who are trying to fight this have to find out what's the new ground around which we organize teachers to oppose the district, to oppose our bosses, because yes, they're saying all A's, but that's just a stopgap measure to bring in the sweet deal of distance learning. So we've got to figure out some other way to organize teachers to essentially get control of our work and to do it in solidarity with our students and each other. So I don't know if that's an answer, but that's my answer that I have for it.
All right.
I think you maybe began to answer my next question on the your previous comment, but my question is, so where does the teacher struggle, where does it connect to the bigger struggles, you know, for a socialist, you know, in the fight against capitalism? And, you know, what is the goal? Like, what should the goal be for a teacher? You know, in the way you see it, to transform society?
What I would dream of, or what I would hope for, is ultimately teachers working in conjunction with their fellow workers. We're talking custodians, office workers, cafeteria workers, security, paraprofessionals, and then to build workers' control of our schools and build a network where of workers who are in communication with each other about how we're going to take over and take back our school district in solidarity with the struggling restaurant workers, with the struggling transportation workers, to basically shut the city down and rebuild it under new ownership. And it's a general strike. It's a general strike that that's what I would see is the institutions that we would need of workers taking that kind of control through struggle and expanding that beyond San Francisco into Oakland, into the Sacramento, linking up with those struggles to basically say, we're going to take this stuff out of your hands and put it under new ownership, under the collective ownership of the working class. And that's our way of eliminating the profit motive from this, because that's, as you said in the last episode, this all comes down to the only reason that anything happens under capitalism is because a profit can be made from it. So we've got to get that out of the equation. We need to put it back into a situation where humans get to decide what happens, what gets made, how it gets made. And there's no way to do it unless capitalism gets removed from the, like, gets taken down and dismantled. So that's what I would see as the, as where this has to lead, as to workers seeing themselves collectively as running their work, but understanding that truly will never happen while capitalism is still there. You know, if it's just like, oh, we got kind of workers' control here and this, because, you know, you hear about these co-ops and things like that. That ain't it. We have to dismantle capitalism, and we have to remove ownership of this property that the capitalists claim and take it from them and put it under new ownership.
Where do you see that that's possible? Where is the hope in that?
I would say the hope of it, and it was most articulated during the stuff around the Yellow Vest and the general strikes in France, right? You see some version of that, or me and Eduardo talked about the general strike in Seattle back in 1919. But that hope is dwindling, or rather, for me, the prospects for that have gotten much less likely, because in the context of this pandemic, we have been atomized and separated. We've essentially agreed to martial law within all of our cities, and these movements have been throttled. So we have a giant rebuilding operation to do. And the left, we just saw Bernie Sanders, like you said in your text, just kiss the ring, and people are going to give him the. And our friend Eduardo here was right. Joe Biden is the Democratic candidate.
Right.
You know, we owe him some like a burrito or something. So things are very, very bad for our side right now. And people are terrified of one another. They are scared to get within 6 feet of each other, right? And that is going to have implications for quite some time. And it's not just about a virus that's going into our head. It's about the fact that we are more afraid of each other than we are of the capitalist class right now. Way more afraid. And we've got it completely wrong. The capitalists are making bank right now. They're using this crisis to accumulate wealth. And the war is moving towards war as capitalist gear for even greater accumulation of stuff abroad. And we're worried. We're getting ourselves, and they're getting us to be worried only about a virus.
And just to jump on with you here, and I think that this whole, at least this, you know, incremental approach, you know, this let's not let go of the hamster wheel, you know, this is too radical, has gotten us exactly this and what's coming.
Yep.
And that's what I guess we call a reformist approach, right? You know, that we can just humanize capitalism in some way and it'll be fine and we'll, you know, and everyone kumbaya, but the evidence is there, you know, that it doesn't work that way.
Right. And to oppose the district, to oppose our bosses, because yes, they're saying all A's, but that's just a stopgap measure to bring in the sweet deal of distance learning. So we've got to figure out some other way to organize teachers to essentially get control of our work and to do it in solidarity with our students and each other. So I don't know if that's an answer, but that's my answer that I have for it.
All right. I don't have any more questions, but I do want you to end. What would you, this is a call out for teachers. I will share this on my Facebook. So I need you to, your message be clear what you're asking your fellow union members, because I think you need to be clear after this petition that it's not just about an A and that there are next steps to this and in general. So,
of course, the stated message is sign the pledge and send it around, right? And that would be good, but that's not as important as workers changing their relationship to the instructions they're getting. and as workers deciding that they need to take control of their workplace again, and or of this process right now. So if you're an educator right now, you should be asking yourself, do I think what's happening is right? Do I believe this, what the district is doing and what we're doing with this distance learning? This is the best we can do, but do I believe this is right? If you do, go along with it, fine, there it is. But if you don't, if you think there's something wrong with it, then you need to find other teachers and organize them and try to push back and stop it. Because that is the only way anything's going to change, is when not from changing people's grades or changing some law or changing something, some aspect of the state. The only way society is going to change is if we as workers change ourselves and change the way we think about our relationship to this structure. And don't think of it as something that we just have to accept, but begin to challenge it. And we challenge it best when we challenge it collectively. So if the fight isn't around grades, find out where that fight is and find other teachers who can join you in that. Because things are not right as they are. Things have to be changed dramatically. And so all of us have the responsibility of figuring out where does that change start with us, not Bernie Sanders, not Ocasio-Cortez. Those are liars. Those are frauds. We have to do it from ourselves, from the base. And that's what I would want to come out of this episode or out of this pledge.
All right. Well, I think you've answered what I was going to ask you, which is what do you want any educator listening to this, wherever they are in whether in California or outside, as you were contacted by Albuquerque folks, no?
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
And thanks for the opportunity to do a little thinking about this stuff. And I appreciate I know I asked you both to give me some questions, and I appreciate having to kind of think about some of this stuff.
Right, that does it for this week's topic. I would like to just a few topics I would like to update about previous topics that we have covered, or they might potentially be future topics. I think that just they're worthy to mention. We could potentially look at for future episodes. If the conservatives are harping on this crisis to restrict abortions because it's not classified as, I quote, urgent care. We have covered abortion. We might maybe revisit that during this time. Christian Smalls, who was one of the managing teams at Amazon at the warehouses, has been calling out Amazon for the lack of care that there have been in warehouses. And he has now been fired by Amazon and Jeff Bezos, where they have leaked information about how they were really orchestrating an effort to get him out, using different reasons other than him calling out the lack of resources that the workers were having. There was for folks that are paying attention to Instagram or other social media, Madonna showed up in a bathtub full of roses in her bathtub, saying that the virus is a great equalizer. I want to call out her privileged self. This is not an equalizer. The virus is not an equalizer. Yes, the virus does not discriminate, but this has definitely been impacting mostly marginalized communities, as we have seen now in Chicago, where the majority of people that are affected by the COVID-19 are African Americans. And hopefully, as more statistics are released, we'll see who really is being affected. And not because the virus is distinguishing a person with a certain skin of color, but because of those communities, their lack of access to resources such as healthcare, proper healthcare that this country does not have, or the environmental pollution that they live in proximity to, and different reasons that we could potentially see. But I just thought Madonna is so out of touch with the people, and I just wanted to call her out on that. Anyhow, I would like for us to please, the USA Census, please be filled out, because one can do it online, and I think there's time for it. Links will be in our show notes, but I'm please asking folks to do it, and whether you two agree with it or not, the reason why I'm putting this is because I want to put perspective for your community. There's about $10,000 for every person that really fills out that will go into your community. And if you're not counted, and even immigrant or undocumented workers that do not fill out, they can, but do not fill out. That is $10,000 less to the community that you live in or serve in. And I really, really, really think that this is an important thing. Huh?
Would the $10,000 go directly to them?
No, it doesn't.
Of course it doesn't.
That would be nice. But I just think that this is something of importance. I don't know. Maybe we can discuss this for a future episode. I saw Andy.
I have to think about it. What I think about that topic.
Andy Lipson, our co-host, is shaking his head no.
Yeah.
He is saying no to it.
Go ahead and lie on the stencils. Don't fill it out. Do whatever you want.
I mean,
I am saying yes to it. I think some people have cushion to lie back on, and others in the community do not. And these are resources that will not be given to a certain community if you do not fill out the census.
And we need funds for perpetual charity, I guess.
All right, I think that does it for this week's episode. So what's left is a weekly political podcast/channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this podcast episode, or on our blog. We are at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes for this podcast/channel with there and connect with us. I remind folks that if you like this, anything that you have heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, and subscribe to any of our 5 platforms on iTunes Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest for something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. Thank you. That does it. I'm Eduardo Vaca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson and socialist Kenny Cepeda. A big thank you to everyone that makes this show happen, Brandy Silk and Gemma Sotomayor and Shirley and Alex, who have not given us their space, and Kenny's mom and brother. So thank you very much. Stay safe and wash your hands, and see you all next time. Ciao.
Bye-bye.